This week on Video Death Loop. Plus, don't even get me started on ping pong. Hey everybody, welcome to Video Death Loop, the podcast where we watch a short video clip on loop until we just can't take it anymore. I'm your host this week, Aaron Littleton. With me is your mangy cur host. John Host. Hello, John.
R
was coming. It was like I was working my way. I had that R just sort of in the buffer of my brain. It's like, I gotta say this R at some point. And it came out way too early.
It was just eager. It was eager to
eager R.
Yeah, just like eager.
What's the letter you get the most excited about saying?
Excited?
Yeah. Like, usually, you know, sometimes like letters are just, it's more fun to say some letters than other letters.
I like a good Q. Like anything with like a quick, you know, that's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you got that little quick and you get to use that little that Q sound, that qua sound in there.
Yeah.
And then it goes into quick. It's just a fun word to say.
That's rare. It's rare. Yeah. You get that. I mean, unless you're, I guess, like a KW maybe, qua. But I don't know. Is there any actual words, anything besides the noise that a chocobo makes? A qua. That uses a KW, I don't know.
Oh man, I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, so maybe not at this point. I don't, you know, good K sound also, like just like good. My favorite, my letter, top five letters of the alphabet at this point.
A ch is very satisfying.
Ch is good, like a charred or something like that.
Cheese.
Yeah.
There's a lot of exciting mouth shapes that can happen after a ch.
Yeah.
A lot of exciting mouth shapes.
Yeah. Like
So I don't know. You're the cur host. You're the cur host, a mangy cur.
I got SC is pretty good. Like scurvy.
Scurvy.
Yeah.
You know, there are some letter combinations in English that are considered, like, I guess they end up more often in like negative connotations than positive ones. Mm-hmm. You know, like ma is often a very negative, like you'll have like, you know, like mal. I guess there's some Latin root word that influenced a lot of things. I feel like ska is one of those. There's not a lot. I'm prepared for an unpleasant word to come after ska. Scuzz.
Well,
scurvy, like you said.
What happens when I say the word scuba, though?
Unpleasant? Is scuba unpleasant? Almost certainly. Right. I've not scuba'd. I've snorkeled. I've snorkeled. Which is like baby scuba, I guess. But I mean, scuba, when you think about it, it's cool to be able to go underwater.
Yes.
I cannot imagine any other part of scuba diving is pleasant. You don't see people walking around with scuba suits on when they don't absolutely have to.
That's true.
It is okay. I want to go way underwater and look at some like badass fish. I've got to put on all of these uncomfortable, unpleasant things. So yeah, I'd say scuba overall unpleasant. Okay. Unpleasant. I'm going on record. Scuba probably not great.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. I can see that being the case on there. And I'll, like, counterpoint on this snorkel, like a good SN sound.
Snuh.
You know? Snuh. It's a snooze.
There's a little, with the snuh words, there's a little, it seems pleasant, but almost in a sort of a seedy way, right? It's like the things you like, you're a little embarrassed of it, like a snooze.
Yeah.
A snorkel. Let's snorkel. Like you, I guarantee you there is a sexual move that's called the snorkel.
Ooh,
it's like probably someone's favorite move. but it feels this snorkel.
Yeah.
You can't see me, but I'm wiggling my fingers when I say snorkel.
No, Aaron, you didn't even have to say that. I know you were. I knew you were. There's nothing like it was the seediest of words on that. Yeah, I can see a little bit on the shadowy side in there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean. Snork. What is there any other good snuff? Snuff. Ooh.
That has multiple bad connotations.
Yeah, exactly, right? But people like it. Like people do snuff like the tobacco thing.
And people watch snuff films.
And people they wouldn't make snuff films if people didn't watch them.
Yeah. Therefore, an audience of at least one.
Yeah, there's someone out there that's very much enjoying both of these things, even though there's sort of a seedy side to it. Ugh, finger wiggly.
It's probably more common than you think, I'm sure, between that, because they're probably like, it's like, oh, yes, finally, get out my finest snuff for the stuff film.
Yeah, sneaky, sneaky.
Ooh, that's a good one.
We all like to be sneaky here and there, don't we?
Mm-hmm. And likewise, just snoop.
Oh, you snoop around.
Yeah.
You snooping. Yeah.
I feel like
I think we're coming down that snuh is like a great, that's a great letter combination.
I'm with you. This is our submission to get on Sesame Street finally, right?
Yeah.
Like this is what we're doing to do that, right? I got some words for Elmo. I mean, yeah. Like
Grover, we will be watching a snuff film today. The monster at the end of this film is you for supporting this filth.
We're going to turn the page on you.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, now that we've thoroughly ruined Sesame Street, mm-hmm. We have a video that we watch. We're going to watch it because I'm the host. I'm the Hearst.
Yeah.
The Hearst, the host, the co-host. Sure. I'm something. I'm doing it.
You're all of that, right?
All of the above. I am the host. I know what the video is. Actually, once again, John, I think I'm going to let you have a choice.
Really?
Yeah. So a couple episodes back, I gave you a choice to choose between for our video of the week. And I gave you a choice back then mm-hmm. of peace or love. And you chose at the time love.
Yeah.
And
I felt like that was a bad choice, if I remember right.
It probably was. It almost certainly was. So, but what I've done, I've just went ahead and I've got another video to represent love. And I'm going to give you the same choice again, peace or love.
Okay.
And whatever you pick, you're not going to know exactly what video you're going to get, but they're going to embody each of these feelings. You've picked love once. Now we've got a new love.
Okay.
And we still got the same original peace.
Okay, so like in life, you like new loves come and go on that.
Yep.
Peace remains an option. At this, right. And I could choose peace.
Right. You could choose peace.
Part of me thinks it would be very funny now that I know this information to never let you get the peace option, but I'm too curious at this point. I want some peace between us.
Okay, fine. We'll have peace today. Peace. It turns out it was an option.
It was.
Peace was an option after all. So great. We're gonna watch our video about peace. Okay. So I am going to start this video and we're gonna watch it until we just can't take it anymore. In 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh, I see. This is a voyage of sorts, I think. I'm seeing here.
Actually, of all of the potential Star Treks, this is the one that's not a voyage.
Not a voyage.
It's more of a sitting around.
Is this a niner? Is this a Deep Space Nine? Yeah, it is.
This is the theme song to Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, hell yeah. Nothing
this
like.
This has been available to you. You could have watched this before now. Such a great opening.
I could watch it anytime I want to. I just turn on the TV. I turn on Tubi or Pluto or whatever. There's a Star Trek Deep Space Nine channel. I can hang out with Sisko anytime I want.
Avery Brooks is always going to be there. He's always ready to get mad about Wolf 9. Wolf, what's that? What was that battle he was real mad about in Deep Space Nine?
Oh, man.
Wolf 529, I think.
Something
maybe.
Like that, yeah.
So, Star Trek, Deep Space Nine. What are the 90s Star Trek shows, 1990s, mm-hmm. that is, for those of you listening 100 years in the future? If they're maybe still making Star Trek, this is not what you were watching. This is Star Trek, Deep Space Nine. It's set on a space station, which is kind of in between two, like a battle zone.
Yeah, it was like something. Between. Yeah, it was like hanging out, just, you know, keeping an eye on things, but mostly letting Quark get into trouble. This was like the Always Sunny in Star Trek.
Wait, it's Always Sunny on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, like a little bit more serious than Always Sunny in there, but it was definitely like it felt like most solutions were either caused by like problems were caused by Quark, usually solved by bringing out the Defiant.
Yes.
Which agreeable
was,
on both all
Quark
fronts,
was a hilarious barkeeper. So it's set on a spaceship that's run ostensibly by the Federation, but there's a lot of civilians sort of doing things. Like, the Federation's almost like the peacekeeping force on Deep Space Nine, because it's like near Bajor, which was a planet that just recently gained its freedom from the Cardassians, I believe.
Yeah. I'm remembering
changed hands a couple times. Like, it was originally built by Bajorans, and then the Cardassians took it over. Kim Kardashian flew in on her spaceship, took over Bajor, made a reality show about it. And then finally, she was run off. The immortal Kim Kardashian, who is presumably immortal if she's still around taking over space stations in 2400, something like that. 2300. That is an unfortunate name they gave those aliens, isn't it?
Yeah.
The 90s, you're like, we got this one person sort of famous that's a Kardashian. Surely nothing will happen with this person's family to make them one of the most famous people on the planet. So let's name our space aggressors the Cardassians.
Yeah, they got to keep up with them in some way, right?
Yeah,
I guess part of the show.
We are so not the first people that have made the keeping up with the Cardassians joke. I feel
that was
almost
immediate.
It's so obvious. It's so obvious, but you know,
but we're making it here right now. The audience has to deal with it at this point. So, you know.
Maybe like you've thought of it. Maybe you haven't. Like, there's probably a really narrow.
We're brave enough to bring it out there.
Yeah. Listen, if you have heard it, you've heard it on like a Tumblr.
Yeah.
A Twitter, if you will.
On a podcast?
A podcast? Probably not.
Mm-mm.
Each medium has its own sort of first. And this is the first. Keeping up with the Cardassians.
The deepest of Space Nine cuts here that we're bringing out here. I do like the little that's not the Defiant, but like the little shuttle that comes out of the deep, like it comes out and kind of flies through and does like the cut
right
in there. It's pretty good. That shuttle does it all. That shuttle probably had the Cardassians on there to keep.
I think
up
that
with.
Was a runabout. Because they had shuttles and they had runabouts in this era of Star Trek. And like a shuttle, I think, was not warp capable. Am I right about that?
I mean, that would make sense. It's a tiny, tiny little ship. Probably doesn't have enough room for a Star Trek sized warp engine of any sort.
Right. But then a runabout was not much bigger than a shuttle, but it had warp capability. So what we saw was a runabout, because you could see the little engines on the bottom.
Yeah. Okay. This is what you show people to get them interested in buying a space station.
timeshare. Listen,
yeah, it's like you could be living here at Deep Space Nine. Enjoy fine festivities. Go to Quark's bar. Enjoy this asteroid roaming about the universe. Where it's going, we don't know either. It's just going on its merry way.
1 week a year, you get to spend right here on Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
There's a maintenance fee, a yearly maintenance fee. It's just $1,400.
And okay.
You get in, it's $30,000 up front, $1,400 a year, and you get a condo on Deep Space Nine that you're sharing with 52 other families.
Okay.
It's just right at the first of the year. You got to register whatever week you want.
Just sign on the dotted line. Give some credits over. Okay. Yep. All right.
Some cold press latinum, if you will.
Where it's like, do I have to worry about the Cardassians? Like either celebrities or the aliens?
1 week a year, maybe. 51 weeks, you're still free and clear.
Okay. All right. Well, it seems like a nice little space station. It's got like a little spiky, dangly things all over it. I don't know what those do, by the way. Like the little curved edges on Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah. They almost make it like a sort of its ball shape. Is that what you're talking about? They like poke up?
Yeah. Like you could kick it if you had a big enough foot.
Yeah. I don't know. I bet they were. I think I've seen spaceships docked at them. They might be docking bays.
Okay.
But I don't know why you would design it like that. It seems like you'd want people to dock near where everyone was. It does not seem like you'd want them to dock whatever, 10 miles above you. And then they have to take a big long elevator. Like, why not make it 5 miles? Why not make it 2 miles if you're just going to stick it out that far?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just, you know, one, it's aesthetically pleasing because it's nice to look at, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
There's a cohesion to Deep Space Nine's design that I love.
Yeah. But maybe you do. Maybe you just don't want people visiting your damn space station. You're like, you want to make it as inconvenient as possible. That's why you have Quark running a bar there for one.
So you're saying Deep Space Nine is like the producers of space stations, where they designed it very specifically for no one to come to.
Yeah, like definitely. If you live here, you just hate people visiting. You just don't want you like. It's like when you visit a tourist town. Like when you buy that timeshare and you go visit that tourist town, everyone in that town who lives there hates you. Specifically, hates you for that entire week.
You very specifically.
Yes, it's like they know they can smell the tourist on you. At that point, and they know you're going to go to Deep Space Nine putt-putt, and you're going to have yourself a good time. But you know, they know you're going to bring up like, I was like, I have a coupon or something. I'm like, oh, here we go again. The coupon is expired. Yeah,
50% off Deep Space Nine putt-putt.
It's a good deal, actually.
Well, but the 50% off coupon only comes in when there's what we can only register times that are when we turn off the artificial gravity, so it's zero G golf.
Oh,
tough. It's either tough or really cool, and I'm not sure which one.
Yeah, it's like it's where you bring a tennis racket to the putt-putt course.
Boom. I mean, I guess you could. I is there a way? Okay, let's design zero G golf.
Okay.
Like here's what it has to be. Truly zero G. Like it can't be when the ball touches the wall, like it like sticks to the wall, unless you've built some sort of like magnet situation into the, no.
Right.
I won't allow that. It has to be a regular golf ball. It cannot be that we can't have a special golf ball. Just regular ass golf ball.
The problem you run into with zero G is like the, you know, with the lack of friction, the ball, when does the ball, the ball doesn't stop. It's like it technically, unless you hit it again, it's still going to be a hole in one.
It's not that there's no friction. I mean, there's still air.
There's still friction and air, but it's not going to like stop like a normal ball does, like on the ground.
Yes, it will not be, unless you are very good at like sitting this ball in a direct flat manner, like any sort of angular momentum, and it's zooming off into space.
Right.
I think you almost have to make it to where the cup like floats, and it's like, you know, right? Because then it becomes like a 3D goal instead of this more 2D goal.
Mm-hmm.
Like the hole is going to be floating in air, and it's almost like, man, maybe we've already made it. Maybe it's just disc golf. Maybe disc golf is zero G golf. Maybe. I mean, Deep Space Nine is practically disc shaped. I mean, it's right there in the name.
Yeah. You could definitely throw like themed Deep Space Nine disc golf into Zero G in a little bit, and like it might bounce off the wall at the worst and maybe try to go back in, but you're trying to hit that in like the chains to get it stuck like I think you're just playing disc golf at that point.
Wow. Is disc golf the sport? I mean, taking this into consideration, is this the sport that continues with humanity once we leave Earth? So much of sport, I guess all of sport probably, is reliant on the exact environmental conditions we have on this planet right now. You know,
right.
Gravity being what it is, air friction being what it is, water behaving the way it does, all of it. I mean, it's all like that. And if you go out into space, let's say humans don't invent artificial gravity. Let's say that's just not in the cards. And when we get out into space, everyone's just going to be floating fucking around until we find a planet that works for us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got to rethink. You've got to rethink sports at that point. All of it. But I think disc golf is one of the ones that you have the least amount of rethinking to do. I think it transitions into zero G environment very, very nicely, actually.
Yeah. I mean, with a sport, by the way, SP, like a pretty good sound at the beginning too, like spa.
Spa
on there.
Makes me feel very, I don't know,
spry.
Competitive. Pride. Pride is that. It is that, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit of a like spryness going on in that.
Spry, a little spring in your step.
Yeah. Hmm. Like, but going into it, yeah, I think it's one of those sports where the other sports, there are probably things you can do. Like when you find another planet, you're like, oh, we can just adjust, make a heavier ball or a lighter ball or something boring like that. Disc golf, you don't need to worry about any of that. You just have like, you can actually do like bigger or heavier disc golf things because you're not having to worry about wind or like throwing a thing across in the, you know, atmosphere and all that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. Well, again, I mean, if you're assuming that humans are playing it in environmental suits in space, yeah, then it becomes, I mean, there is no atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's, I'm just saying no zero gravity, like a human, or not no zero, no artificial gravity.
Right.
And like, I assume humans will find very close replicas of Earth in this future, if we have to travel off Earth, if we get to travel off Earth, that's the question, I suppose. If we get to travel off Earth, we'll find some, you know, stuff that's pretty close, you know, close enough for humans. They'll figure it out. But there will be extreme environments in the meantime until we find these places that we'll have to think, do we want to be doing sports out here? I mean, basketball is fucked. Basketball is super fucked.
Basketball is omega fucked, actually. It's the most fucked. Baseball is pretty up there. But basketball, extremely, extremely
like,
there.
It's so reliant on gravity. Like, what a weird thing. Of all sports, I feel like basketball is one of the most gravity-reliant sports there is.
Yeah, I mean, you got to worry about, like, traveling and dribbling and stuff.
I mean, you're going to take a step, and as soon as you take a step, you're going to go flying off of the plane that you're on. You try and dribble the ball, like it will bounce back up, but it's just going to go flying away if you miss it. And you're never going to know exactly how far away you are from whatever plane you're trying to dribble off of it. So it's just incredibly difficult to have any kind of rhythm to your dribbling. And then the whole point of basketball is scoring, where you throw the ball and you just know it's coming back down, and it's not gonna. It is absolutely not gonna. Basketball was not planned for this specific future we have created.
No, I will say that. Basketball is a quaint sport that they talk about, like back the Earthians used to play, but they cannot like they would try to recreate on Deep Space Nine in their education classes. Like the kids will try to recreate it, like what they think basketball is, but it would just be a terrible amalgamation of terribleness going on in it.
The only thing they have to recreate basketball is they have to play NBA Jam. Like, well, I guess people caught on fire during basketball games.
Their shoes became red, and there was like only two, there's four people on the field, no referees. They just push each other over. It's weird.
Yeah, it's
violent.
If that was the only example of basketball we had in the future, I mean, we deserve it, right? Like, I guarantee you there are things that we have where like, I don't know, we have this one book and that survived from this one time period, and that's the only thing we know about what humans were doing during this time period. And you zoom back in the past and it was written by the most fucked up guy. He had really wrong ideas, like completely incorrect information about anything. Like, I guess that's just what people did.
it's like if the only thing that survived from the early 21st century is Twitter.
Yeah. Oh my God. What a complete misrepresentation of humanity.
Yeah. Just be like, you, no one, it would be terrible. It would be a bad thing.
Let's hope someone please, I don't know, get like a video of the early 1990s Chicago Bulls and put it in a bunker somewhere so people in the future will know what basketball is, because they sure as shit aren't going to be able to play it in space.
Yeah, no, definitely, like, show them some Michael Jordan footage and be like, this is basketball at its best, like, you know, Bulls versus Blazers, what, you know.
Sure. That's b-ball.
That's b-ball, baby. You don't even have a, like, where would the net, even the net in basketball is fucked in space, because like it's supposed to go like, it's supposed to like wrap down and like kind of have this very pleasing look to it. The net, that's going to be all, it's going to be a mess. You can't even have it.
I guess the guy that, what was it, that nailed peach baskets to a wall and created basketball in the 1800s or early 1900s, whatever that possibly apocryphal story is. I think that's real, though. I've heard that a lot. That the invention of basketball, a guy like nailed some peach baskets up on a wall, and then they had to get a ladder out to get the ball down every time someone scored. And then someone's like, why don't we knock the bottom out?
Then they're like, oh shit.
Oh fuck, basketball 2.0. I guess it's not hard to believe that sport is not ready for space.
Yeah,
the fact that it was not self-evident after presumably quite a few games that this game did not need to pause to get a ladder out and get the ball out of the basket.
They were maybe were not some went.
Forethinking people involved with its creation.
Right. They were not thinking about space at the time. They were thinking, we need to do something right now. But most sports are going to be pretty, it's going to be pretty bad. Baseball, you just can't have it also. Rough. Like, yeah, you hit the ball once and it's going into deep reaches of space. You're not getting that ball back.
No.
Every hit's a home run, weirdly
enough.
Yeah,
if it's out, without a doubt, like almost any ball focused sport has to happen the equivalency of indoors in space. Like,
right.
Because you're right, like the ball is just going to just fly away forever. An object in motion will continue in motion.
Yeah, someone's going to get beamed in the head with that ball like 4,000 light years away at some point, and it's going to be your fault. You're not going to know it. You're going to be long dead. So you don't feel the shame of it, but for shame.
Yeah, really. My assumption is that, let's say humanity goes into space and they're like, I guess let's try baseball in space, and they don't have some kind of a net or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're playing baseball and they're knocking all these balls off into space, right? And so the balls are just flying out. And then eventually they're like, oh, well, we lost all those balls. And then eventually humans are like, we should probably get those balls because they will kill someone in like some hundreds of thousands of years. And so then someone is going to have to do some kind of a history project, like watching every baseball game that ever happened in space and calculating the direction the balls went in and then sending fast enough spaceships. You know, this is probably potentially like hundreds, if not thousands of years later, like in the direction of those balls to recover them, to keep them from like knocking someone in the head eventually.
Yeah, this is actually just how we find a like a normal like Earth-like planet that they can play normal sports in again. This is just how they find it in the end. Like they eventually, like, not because they're trying to actively look for it, because they're trying to catch all these balls before they hurt someone.
They're like, "Hey God, what is this place?"
Yeah,
it's pretty sweet. There's a fence. There's a fence all the way around it. The ball went over the fence. We've got to go get it.
The ball fell to Earth. It's still in play. It's still in play. Come on. Get it. Throw it to third. Throw it to third.
Why did we have to design these balls to be able to exist through atmospheric reentry? Why did we design the titanium baseball?
We didn't have enough forethought on that. We were too worried about like peach baskets in this case.
It's the same story, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the same story. Humanity goes to space, decides titanium baseballs. Humanity on Earth has peach baskets. And you're dealing with these problems thousands of years. The ball is in play and they've got to go and find the descendants of the people in that game so it can actually finish. Like, listen, you're like 14th great grandfather hit a ball and now you've got to run around a baseball diamond, but we've got a bunch of the descendants of the people, the first baseman and whatnot, that are going to try and stop you, and it just has to happen.
And look, it's two outs, bottom of the ninth, and no pressure. But how good are you at baseball? Earth baseball. You've never played this sport before. How good are you at it?
Like, I'm quite a sprinter. Everyone's like, that's good, good sounds one. Fast.
Yeah.
That I sounds mean, fast.
It sounds professional.
Professional. Fesh. Ooh. Fesh is fesh. Pretty good, too.
Fesh. Yeah.
People are like, what are fish?
Fish.
It's on the Earth, which yeah. we ruined by playing too much basketball. Basketball is why people had to abandon Earth. So it's probably poetic justice that it does not work in space.
Yeah, we had
Everyone was like, yeah, this is definitely the best sport. This is the best thing humans can ever do. So we should probably just, everyone should play basketball all the time. Mm-hmm. And we paved over the entire planet and turned it into basketball courts. And then they're like, oh shit, we forgot about food. We're going to have to leave Earth now because Earth is one big basketball multiplex arena.
One big concrete jungle.
Scuzzy. I'm tapping.
All right.
Okay. I mean, we don't have to stop watching the video. I'm just, going to tap.
I was not prepared for, I know Star Trek intros don't have a lot going on with, like, they don't have the people usually in it. Usually the ship and being in space and all that. Yeah. I was not prepared for how calming the Deep Space Nine loop was going to be.
Yeah, no, it's good. That's why I call it peace.
Yeah.
It's peace. It's truly peace.
Yeah.
I went to a wedding once, and the bride walked down the aisle to the Star Trek Deep Space Nine theme song. Ooh.
That's a good choice.
I was like, that's a totally appropriate choice, bride. Correct. I don't know why everyone isn't doing this.
Was it like was it this long, or was it like, did they just loop it, or like, was it just a quick walk down?
I think she got where she was going.
Okay.
Within the one loop of Star Trek. Plus, there's probably an album, right? That's like Star Trek songs, like the full versions. Like, there's probably a second verse.
Songs to use at weddings too.
Yeah, probably. Well, there we go. We did it. We recorded another episode of Video Death Loop.
We did it.
We've done it. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to the people of Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
Who made us their seventh most popular comedy podcast this week. Like, outpacing Joe Rogan. You, Joe Rogan.
Yeah,
and Papua New Guinea. We're the famous ones.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Thank you. Thank you to all of Papua New Guinea on that. Like when I saw that on there on the list on there, it's like just to, and there, and I was like, it's like, oh, okay. It's like, hey, there we go. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. I just like to shout out, you know, other comedy podcasts. We are better than you. Conan O'Brien needs a friend. I don't think so. Conan O'Brien needs to get on the same level as Video Death Loop for the people in Papua New Guinea. That is.
Yeah, if
legit. Thanks for listening, Papua New Guinea. It made our day. Absolutely made our day. anyway, you can come back next week. John Hurst, the Hurst, not John Jern Hurst.
Yeah, like eventually that name just gets devolves into a stroke, basically.
Yes, it will. It will, and it's all going to be me, and like you could just hear my cognitive decline as the years go on in Video Death Loop. I've got everything good except for your name, and that's truly that is truly how bad you can tell I have gotten is just listening to me saying John's name.
Yeah, it just rolls off the tongue.
John will be your host next week. I will be the co-host. In the meantime, you can send us an email, questions@videodeathloop.com. If you have video suggestions, questions, whatever you want to say to us, you can follow us on social media. Tell your friends, please. It's always good to tell friends. All of you folks of Papua New Guinea, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, like tell people on the internet, tell people around you to, like, you know, go to the local your local market or bodega, whatever you need on there, to tell them about Video Death Loop.
Folks, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.